Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Welcome to Friday's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight we have a very interesting show. Basically, we're looking at some of the shootings that have occurred in the past, and we're asking a question tonight. Is there such thing as possibly being brainwashed, or is there such thing as maybe a Manchurian candidate? So tonight, that's what we're going to be discussing. The topic tonight is Manchurian Candidate. Is it a conspiracy theory or is it a real threat? Is the Manchurian Candidate more than just a character in a Richard Condon novel? Can someone unknowingly be brainwashed into becoming a program assassin? Conspiracy theorists are saying shooters in the Aurora Theater shooting, Newtown, the D.C. Navy Yard, and the Gabby Gifford, I'm sorry, cases are all Manchurian candidates. However, one common denominator found in each case was that they all had some form of or were on some form of a psychotic drug. So I guess we want to know, are the shooters suffering at the time of these shootings from some type of psychotic break, or were they brainwashed into becoming Manchurian candidates? Again, tonight's topic is Manchurian Candidate, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat? Our guest tonight is Dr. John Hall. Dr. Hall is a currently practicing anesthesiologist and pain management in Texas. He is a diplomat of the American Board of Anesthesiology and a member of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. In addition to being active in the Mind Science Foundation, which dedicates itself to the study of human consciousness. We want to say good evening to Dr. Hall. Good evening, Doctor. How are you?
Hey, Carrie. How are you tonight?
Great. Thank you for being with me.
Great to be here.
Well, thank you. You know, tonight we want to look at, you know, the topic Manchurian candidates, programmed assassins, and look at, is there a connection between that and some of the shootings that have occurred over the last couple of years. But before we go there, we want to talk a little bit about a police shooting up in the Capitol where Marion Carey was shot because she was allegedly using her car as a weapon to charge the barricades up there, or they felt like it was a threat to the officers. What are your thoughts on that particular shooting?
Well, if you put it in context with the shootings that happened, at first when I heard the news about that, I kind of just blew it off until I looked a little deeper into it. And, you know, all of her family members and the dentist she worked for, everybody said that she was, you know, a pretty good lady, you know, pretty normal, always seemed happy, had never really, you know, talked about having any issues, even though there was a little something about her possibly having postpartum depression, which, you know, certainly that's a pretty normal finding. It happens relatively frequently. Brooke Shields, if you remember, you know, had postpartum depression. It certainly is an excuse for, you know, going and, you know, trying to run people over or run over the barricades into the White House. But what kind of caught my attention with her is that she did mention having been stalked in the past, and according to news stories, that she had had her tires slashed, which certainly, as we'll talk about later, and with some of the victims that I've worked with what we call gang stalking or organized stalking, that's pretty, car tampering is pretty typical of one of the things that they do. And just looking at her behavior, that she drove as far as she did with her child in the car and did the things that she did, which is completely out of character, is typically what you see by definition in a Manchurian candidate.
Really? So when her I think it was her family, said that she had been, you know, in the hospital and hospitalized recently for that, that doesn't necessarily mean it was because of mental illness the situation occurred.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm gathering, because her family also made comments that they wanted things looked into further because they seemed a little shocked that even with the diagnosis of postpartum depression, like I said, which typically, you know, doesn't cause a violent streak. If anything else, it's severe postpartum depression. Women may try to kill themselves, but they certainly don't try to kill someone else. So I think they're kind of questioning what went on as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the fact that you have a book out that deals a lot with this particular subject. Tell us about your book and how it's connected to our subject tonight.
Well, Carrie, I'll tell you first off, I kind of wrote this book out of necessity or feeling impelled to at least expose the public to the fact that this technology exists. I worked with a girl here in San Antonio who had came to me with a complaint that most of these victims come with, which is organized stalking. And by that, I mean she was being stalked by people unknown to her, as well as hearing voices in her head and feeling like she was being attacked by radio frequency or microwave-based weapons that you can't see, causing burning in the skin, burning in the eyes, muscle twitching, and very obviously coming from the outside. And I knew this girl well, knew the family well, knew there was no prior history of mental illness or drug abuse, and knew a little bit about some of this technology already. So gave her the benefit of the doubt and counter-surveilled the people that she thought that, or set up some counter-surveillance technology that to try to see if indeed she was being stalked. And set up voice-activated recorders, hid those in her condo. She didn't want video, which I, a young single female, which I understood. And probably 2 days into setting up the voice-activated audio in her place, had actually caught her in a drug state. She had been drugged with Rohypnol in her bottled water, which is a date rape drug that blocks your memory. And she was being stalked by several different vehicles, all the plate numbers traced back to a private investigative group here in San Antonio, owned and operated by a former FBI agent, who I had been told about before by a fellow physician who had told me that he used this guy, referred to him as the ghost, said that he didn't have a Social Security number, and he did this barely legal harassment type of work, that he was hiding them from his wife in case he ever wanted to make her look crazy during a divorce. And at that time, I kind of blew this guy off. It sounded like, you know, kind of some fabrication or at least embellishment of someone who was in the FBI, until this girl came with that complaint. And sure enough, the vehicles that were following her all traced back to this particular private investigative agency. And we caught them on video. They were putting Rohypnol in her bottled water, subliminally controlling her to drink where they put the drug, and then essentially using her as a sex slave. At one point, it even appeared that men were paying money to come and sexually assault her while she was in a drug state with the Rohypnol and wouldn't remember, to the point of having vaginal tears, cervical lacerations, infections. Unfortunately, this type of crime, as I found out, we couldn't get these people behind bars. She had no recall, well enough recall, due to the Rohypnol of the sexual assaults to pursue that. At that time, the stalking laws in Texas hadn't been changed. Actually, this case and one other case were kind of the impetus to get the stalking laws changed in the state of Texas. So the police basically said, this guy's former FBI, he's a private investigator, he stalks people for a living. There's not much we have to go by to come after him for stalking. And during that time period, actually, two other people in the state of Texas, one in the Fort Worth area, one in Fredericksburg, just north of San Antonio, came forward independently of me, identifying him in similar cases prior to the book even being released. But the reasoning for the book was basically to expose the problem. I know it, for people who happen to read it or have read it, it sounds like sci-fi when you read it, but all the events in that book are true. A lot of research was done on the technology, and it's all nearly the perfect crime. You know, these are weapons that you can't see. There's no way to prove or disprove, you know, what you're hearing in your head, which is typically the people watching you telling you where you are, what you're wearing. So there's no question that you are being watched. And there's very little way to prove it, at least until we have, you know, some government exposure of the technology. So I thought the next best thing would be to write the book and at least try to expose it to the public. And the book did what I expected it to do. I had a lot of family members call me saying that, you know, my son, my daughter, my wife had made similar complaints. And until we heard you on a radio show and read your book, we had been to several different psychiatrists, and despite medication, you know, the complaints were still there. So, I mean, at least it got through to a few people that, you know, there's some technology that can mimic mental illness, and it's obviously meant to do that.
And tell us the name of the book.
It's a new breed, satellite terrorism, in America, and it's at Barnes & Noble's, Amazon, or can be ordered off of my book website, which is satweapons.com. And there's also a movie in the works based on a screenplay written on the book, which will be a dramatic movie based on true events. And information there is at newbreedmovie.com.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I saw on your website where you explain some of the things that can occur when you're being a gang stalk. Can you kind of go into, for someone who is not familiar with it, what kind of things could possibly occur if this is happening to you?
Sure, and that's actually very important, Carrie, because that's the one chance you have to probably do something about it. If stalking, if you can prove it, especially in the state of Texas, another case called the Christy Appleby case was a girl who had gone to the police about her stalkers. They ignored her, actually called her delusional as well. She had a stalker hold her at gunpoint and make her slit her own wrist, write a suicide note and slit her wrist. When she went to the sheriff's department with all this, she did survive that episode. They said that she was just playing out and looking for a cover for an attempted suicide and recommended her to a psychiatrist. 6 months later, her stalker followed her to work and shot her down in the parking lot of her work. So that case in combination with mine is what got Texas legislators to change the rules on stalking here. We're used to you had to show proof of injury by your stalkers to get a restraining order. Now, at least in the state of Texas, if you notice the same person following you more than twice, you can actually get a restraining order on them for following you. But, the stalking is organized stalking. It's not typical stalking like you would see from an ex-girlfriend or ex-spouse. It's, you know, full-spectrum stalking. It's people at your house, at your job, following you everywhere you go, oftentimes on your property, around the house. It's pretty much 24/7. Oftentimes they will try to dress up and pretend like there's some form of law enforcement. At least here in San Antonio, even presented themselves to several of this girl's neighbors as FBI until they were asked for credentials, and then they backed off and said, well, we're actually private investigators. And but that's so your neighbors have a story that they can be told so they don't question why these people are hanging around. There's oftentimes a discreditation campaign. As they start the stalking, when neighbors ask questions, they'll say, well, this person's a pedophile or a drug dealer, that kind of thing. So the people who may notice them doing this haven't, at least in their minds, an excuse for doing it. Sometimes they'll even rope the neighbors into helping. You know, can we put a camera on your front porch facing this person's house or things like that, which I made clear in my book. The FBI doesn't ask for your help. If you're going to be under law enforcement surveillance, they're not going to have your neighbors help do it. So anybody that has somebody come up and ask them that, check credentials and call the police, because that's not the way the FBI typically works. Then they'll usually break into the house, move things around, take appliances apart, put them back together, leave screws out, break doors, leave cigarettes burning in an ashtray, holes in the walls. Just it's mainly intentionally done to let you know that people have been inside. Typically, they don't steal anything, because if they steal something, that will draw a burglary charge. And the police typically do investigate burglary. But when it's just criminal trespassing and mischief, all they do is come out and write a report. And after you call the police two or three times for this type of a scenario, they're going to write you off as crazy and stop coming completely. And these perpetrators know that, because many of them are former law enforcement, as I said, or former FBI. And once you're put on that list, then they have pretty well free rein getting in and out of your home to rifle through your belongings and get whatever information they need about your identity, your health problems, what you typically read. So they have information to work against you with. But almost all of the victims will report things that they first notice are, you know, a piece of furniture in a different place, you know, shoes that you left in your bedroom, you know, maybe sitting on the island in the kitchen, cigarette butts, you know, all over the place where people smoked, you know, at the back of your house or on your back porch or patio while they were rummaging through your place. That will typically go on for about a month. Kind of the more esoteric or supernatural or science fiction sounding stuff happens after that. But the time to really kind of put an end to it is with the stalking. And, you know, the bad thing about kind of where we're at with, you know, with mental illness in this country is people are so afraid to be called crazy that they won't call the police during the stalking because they're never too sure. You know, that car seems like it's following me every day, but, you know, maybe it's somebody in my neighborhood or maybe it's somebody who works in my same area. But once they have free rein and they know the police aren't going to come, then it gets past the point of even what you would call surveillance, but it's, you know, more sitting in the driveway, you know, shining their bright lights into your window, you know, making noises around your house, street theater. The stalkers will often come up next to you while you're in line at the grocery store and start talking about stuff they found in your house with each other, within earshot of you. So you know that the person standing right next to you has been in your home, or they'll mention a conversation you had with someone else, you know, in third person. I mean, it's really pretty bad. And you know, at that point, that's when people usually start looking for help. But by that point is also usually when they're hearing voices and being attacked with directed energy and some other weird things that go on that cause the police not to believe them.
And you know what, to a layperson who has never experienced someone stalking them, it does sound crazy. But because I myself have experienced stalking, I can kind of relate to some of this. And I can relate to someone sitting outside my home and following me in and out of businesses and getting behind me in a line or coming into a business and giving the impression that, you know, you're doing something that you're not supposed to be doing. And I've had this by a law enforcement agency, y'all, because of one of the shows that I did. I don't pick any bones about it. Fort Worth PD has harassed me for over 2 years. So some of it sounds like I can totally relate to it. But I'm sure a lot of people probably are thinking, this sounds insane, you know, because they haven't been through it. But I just say to y'all, listen, but by grace, there goes you. So just, you know, sometimes you have to keep an open mind, even though it may be something that you've never experienced before. It just sounds totally odd. This is one of those shows where you absolutely need to listen with an open mind and just say, well, you know what, maybe I haven't seen it, but that does not, you know, say that it's not possible, because I have seen some of these very things occur in my own life. So I do know that, you know, to an extent, I can absolutely relate to all of this. So that is called gang stalking, right?
Yeah, that was the term that was used for a long time. In my books, I usually refer to it as organized stalking, because it is very well organized. And, you know, gang stalking kind of gives people the impression that it's, you know, guys in, you know, black leather jackets or, you know, Crips or the Bloods or, you know, to me, it kind of gives the wrong picture, because this, you know, this isn't, you know, gang thugs that are doing this. This is well-organized. Many times it's former law enforcement individuals working as private investigators. I mean, these aren't gangs by definition that most of us think of, you know, at least in your mind when you think of a gang. You know, these are, it's very well-organized. It's done in shifts. You know, a lot of times these victims will say, well, I know who they are because they'll always have one headlight out, or they'll all have one particular emblem on their car, so they actually can recognize each other while they're doing the stalking of an individual. So, I mean, it's well done, and it's been well finessed, and it's actually based on an FBI tactic from the 60s called COINTELPRO.
Oh, yeah.
And COINTELPRO, you know, was an operation by the FBI in the 60s to try to tear apart what they saw as radical groups from the inside. You know, they used some extreme COINTELPRO methods on the Black Panthers, on Martin Luther King and his organization, Weather Underground. I mean, anybody that they viewed as politically not of their same mindset at that time. And that's the kind of things they did. They broke in. They left notes to, you know, a person's wife that looked like it was, you know, from them, or to a man that it looked like it was from another woman, and anything they could do to foster division within the organization. And that's exactly what they do with this type of stalking. One of the other things that happens with it is called phone spoofing. If you have a married couple and the man is being targeted and the woman is oblivious to it, you know, one of the things they'll do is send text messages to his phone that looks like it's coming from his wife, when in reality it's one of the perpetrators actually spoofing her phone number. So when he keeps calling and saying, why are you sending me these off-the-wall messages, or, you know, messages that are, you know, maybe a little bit on the vile side, or, you know, and she keeps saying, I'm not texting you. Well, yes, you are. Look, they're right here. You know, well, you're crazy because they're not coming from me. No, it's your number. You know, that's called phone spoofing, and that's very easy to do. And it works just about every time to put a wedge between a couple.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, especially in a married couple. Because imagine, I don't know if you're married or not, Carrie, but, you know, imagine if you happen to look at your husband's phone and, you know, you saw a bunch of messages on there that looked like they were coming from another woman that were very sexually explicit. You know, are you going to believe him when he tells you, well, it's somebody spoofing my phone. I don't even know where this number is coming from. Or worse yet, if they use one of your girlfriend's numbers to spoof and make it look like it's a sexual message coming from her to him. It drives a wedge in a couple just about 100% of the time.
And, you know, and trust me, y'all, they do these things. Seen some of that. What I would say is your defense, I would think, would be you got to tell the other person, you know, even though you hope that you don't scare them to death and run them off because, you know, they don't want to be involved in, you know, what, you know, they didn't have anything to do with. But at the same time, your only defense is to let those around you know of these things occurring, correct?
That's the best defense, and you're right. It doesn't always work. I've had a lot of victims call me and ask me, can you please, you know, talk to my wife or talk to my husband or talk to my parents. You know, they're my only support system, and they don't believe a word I'm telling them. I've done that quite a bit, and sometimes talking to me helps. Sometimes they think I'm just as crazy as you know, the person they're living with. But oftentimes what they will do is, if it's a married couple and the woman is actually the person they're interested in targeting, at least I know that's the way the group here works, they will pretty much leave the female alone in the relationship. They'll target the male, knowing that eventually she's going to think he's crazy and get him committed or divorce him, leaving herself alone and easier to target. And that's a real common scenario, because across the nation, this is being used for sexual assault in a number of cases.
As far as if the person is employed, have they bothered the person's employer, spread rumors, those type of things?
Oh, yeah. That's a real another common ploy. They'll make sure to get word into the employer that this person is under surveillance of one type or another. Usually they'll say FBI because of being a pedophile, because of being a drug dealer, because of being, you know, a whistleblower. And unfortunately, a lot of times, these victims will be forthright with their employer, and they'll come in and they'll say, you know what, I've got people following me every day. They're following from the house. They're following from my work. I'm seeing them in the parking lot. You know, I know they're telling people, you know, bad things about me. And sometimes that's enough for your employer, you know, if you're in a licensed field, to mandate a psychiatric evaluation on you if they don't believe you. And oftentimes, you know, even if they do believe you, they'll say, well, you know, we don't want all this hassle here, so we're going to let you go. So, I mean, trying to inform the employer ahead of time or be honest about it usually backfires for most of the victims.
Wow. And you know what? And the thing is, as far as a recourse for the person that's suffering from this, would you advise them to take pictures of whoever is following them, you know, take license plate numbers, get, you know, y'all, this is what I believe in. I need your, you know, is this black male, black female, white female, white male? How tall are they? You know, what were they dressed in? What were they driving? License plate? Would you advise them? I mean, listen, I turned into, like, okay, if you want to stalk me, I want your information as well. Do you agree with that?
Oh, exactly. That's what I recommend to people. And you know, it's sad, Carrie, because most of us, you know, weren't raised up or didn't train in a field where, you know, you're expected to do counter-surveillance or counterintelligence. You know, I don't know, other than your radio show, what your occupational history is, but, you know, I'm a physician. You know, I certainly never in a million years thought I would be lumped into being a private investigator and doing counter-surveillance on somebody to try and figure out what's going on with them. And most people aren't, and that's why they're so afraid to pick up that phone and call the police and report stalking, because they're afraid they're going to be called crazy. So what I recommend is if you notice the stalking, write the plate numbers down. I mean, just about every state has somebody, you know, you've got a friend who's got a friend who's got a husband who's on the police department that can run a plate for you. Worst comes to worst, you hire a PI yourself to run the plates to find out who it is. It's not illegal to take someone's photo in a public place, as long as you're not creeping around their house and trying to take it through the window. If these people are coming up in here harassing you in your vehicle or harassing you on the street, you know, take your phone and snap a picture or video. I certainly recommend that for those that can afford it, that they get cameras around the house that are attached to a DVR, preferably one that you can Wi-Fi and monitor while you're away, because, you know, at least that they have to disable that to get in. And for the break-ins, I always recommend that, you know, make sure you have one door that you go in and out of. The rest of the doors, and including your garage doors, that you have some type of a sliding lock on that will make them have to kick a door in. Because oftentimes, most of the victims, including here in San Antonio, they were coming in through the garage doors. And the garage doors on most homes aren't part of the alarm system. So what they do is they buy these remote controllers, generic remote controllers, multi-frequency controllers, until they can get the garage door open, and then let down the attic access, you know, which in most homes now is in the garage, bring the staircase down and walk around, you know, go over the door from the garage to the house where the alarm is. The only thing that would catch them would be motion detectors in the house, which in this case in San Antonio, the motion detectors did catch them in the house, but they had surveilled long enough to know what the codes were, so they just shut them off and actually shorted out the siren on the alarm so it wouldn't go off when they were in the house. But, you know, there are some things you can do, and if you have enough evidence and you're not being harassed with the rest of what we're going to talk about, the police usually will take stalking pretty seriously.
Unless it's them harassing y'all, but anyway.
Unless it's them part of
it. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm going somewhere else. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the topic, Manchurian Candidate, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat. And we're talking to Dr. John Hall, who's a physician out of San Antonio, turned private investigator, based on some of the things that he's learned about things like satellite terrorism, organized stalking, electronic stalking. Those are the kind of things that we're talking about tonight. So call a friend, call a neighbor, tell them to get on the computer and listen to the show, because there's some very good information coming out about some of the shootings that we've seen. And we're basically just asking the question, is it a situation of a Manchurian candidate, or, you know, is this a situation of people who are, you know, suffering from mental illness? So that's what we're looking at tonight. But Dr. Hall, you know, when I looked at your site and was amazed at some of the information that you were putting out on there, when I saw the term satellite terrorism, I had never seen that term before. Can you describe to us what that's about?
Yeah, from talking to contacts I have within the CIA, when this was going on long before the book was written with the girl I worked with here, one thing we noticed that it went everywhere you did. I mean, and just so people know, what we're talking about on this level of it is attack with electromagnetic weaponry that is satellite-based now on reconnaissance and surveillance satellites, and has long been there. And these are weapons that take advantage of the electromagnetic spectrum, radio frequency, microwave, millimeter wave, that type of thing, which were actually invented to be able to attack electronic equipment. But over the years, they figured out that the human brain and the human nervous system works exactly like electronic equipment and can be attacked the same way with these electromagnetic weapons. Well, one thing we've noticed with these victims is they complain about it, whether they're at home, in the car, on a plane to another state, driving to another state, or in another country. And there's only, you know, one form of technology that can really do that, and that's satellite. So I got a hold of some of my contacts before writing the book and said, you know, hey, do we have a satellite platform of directed energy? And one of my friends that I talked to said, yes, we do. It's a weapon of war for use abroad only. And I said, well, then, you know, we have, you know, several hundred thousand people voicing complaints of being attacked now with directed energy in the United States alone, more abroad. And it apparently is some form of experimentation. But the reason for the satellite part of it is because it is one of the few ways that they can follow you everywhere you go, essentially no escape. And I know some of the websites I've seen dealing with this problem have tried to present it as through-wall technology, like maybe a black van sitting outside your house using a microwave gun. From what we've seen and from what I know of the technology and talking to people that are experts in the technology, that's still not quite feasible. They have worked on some handheld microwave devices, but they still need a pretty big power supply with them. And if, you know, one of the things, you look at the millimeter wave weapon that they use in the Army is actually on the back of a Humvee. It's not this, at least in most cases I've seen, I'm fairly certain is not being done by, you know, somebody with a modified microwave oven that they turned into a weapon somehow that are beaming it at you from, you know, across the room or, you know, on the other side of an apartment wall. But that is one of the, probably the fallacies I see in most of the victims that contact me, is they're all just absolutely certain that it's someone in the apartment next to them or below them, and they may have neighbors involved. I mean, it's not unusual for them to rope neighbors into helping surveil you or watch you or let them use their place, but the directed energy attack and the voices that they're hearing are usually done remotely from behind a computer screen using a satellite form of technology. And you know, we have counter-surveilled a group here to know quite a bit about the way they operate. So
are we talking about this is law enforcement at what level doing this, or can this just be average Joe who has the knowledge to do this?
No, this is not average Joe stuff. There's no way you can gain access to this technology just by Googling it. And this is probably where I fall short in trying to explain this. It is the government doing it to you. But if you look back at MKUltra and MKSearch and all the early research on mind control, it was never done directly by the CIA or the NSA. It was always done through a front company. It was always done guised as legitimate research through a university. When these victims, you know, claim that the government is attacking and are surveilling them, indirectly it is the government. It's certainly all it's government technology, but it's government technology that's been placed in the hands of certain perpetrator groups in every major city that are being allowed to access it, or being allowed to use it however they want to use it, while the data from its use basically is compiled and monitored by the appropriate agencies that released it to see how well it works. There's so many people complaining about this now, and it's done so methodically, the way it's delivered and the way the whole phenomenon works, that it really can't be anything other than experimentation, because most of these victims are not political radicals. They're not terrorists. They're housewives. They're doctors. They're lawyers. They're people who work at a restaurant. You know, there would be no reason to single them out or target them in any way with anything, much less this technology. So it appears to be experimentation.
So when I've heard heard people say things like the smart meter, you know, is taking your data and, you know, and processing it for the government, or, you know, pretty much all the old appliances, they're trying to get us to do away with those and get new appliances. And we know all the new appliances have the technology to cut themselves off, you know, that they can be, programmed so that they can be turned off from another location. Like if your utility provider wanted to turn off your microwave, the newer ones, not the older ones, but the newer ones, at some point, if they decided to do that, they would be able to do that from the office. Have you heard of that technology?
Oh, yeah. And I know there's been a big uproar about the smart meters. You know, one thing I will tell you that I've got some pretty good contacts in the City Public Service in San Antonio. For those of you listening outside of Texas, the City Public Service is our power company, and at least that's what it's called here. I think it's probably something else in Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. But I talked to him about that, and, you know, he kind of, you know, allayed some of my fears about the smart meter in one instance, but then he kind of raised up another serious question with me that he goes, well, you know, his exact words, he said, you know, we don't need smart meters. And I said, well, you know, why is that? And he goes, well, we can listen inside your house with the wiring itself. And actually, the FBI in some cases has came to them with subpoenas and warrants to be able to tap into the power lines. You know, you have a whole grid of wiring throughout every room of the house. And it actually can pick up vibrations and pick up sound. What he explained to me is that when you look at an outlet receptacle, you know, you've got the two spade prongs, and then you've got the little circular hole on the bottom that most people refer to as the ground. Well, that's not truly a ground. That's actually a return. And if you look on the poles leaving your house, you'll see at least three wires. Two of them for the alternating current, and one of them is the return wire. And actually, the people who work for the power company communicate to each other through that power line when they're on poles or they're communicating from one power station to another, and that's actually the same line that can actually be tapped into to listen in on your home.
Wow. So when we're talking about getting new vehicles, we're talking about GPSs that are on them that can track you everywhere. The smart meter, he just explained how it can do what it does. And so basically there's ways in which they can basically monitor every aspect of your life.
Oh, they can track you by the clothes that you're wearing. You know,
oh,
all
Lord.
Of our clothes just about now have RFID. And the NSA has actually put some things into place. I know in California they're actually experimenting with mass surveillance using RFID scanners, where every time you walk through a doorway and you've got some form of clothing on with an RFID, especially if they have cameras in the doorways, not only does it set off the RFID, but it matches your picture. And I know they've long been working on a program through the NSA. Now that they have it up and running in Utah, where they actually have the storage space to collect this much data, but where, you know, everywhere you go, you basically leave essentially a fingerprint, digital fingerprint of having gone in and out of that place, along with a picture as you're coming in the door. And if they needed to do a background check on you or find out where you've been, a history, they can actually, you know, see, well, okay, she went into Starbucks to get her, you know, skinny cinnamon dulce latte at 8. Then she got back in her car. Then she walked through the doors of her work. And then she went to Walmart on her lunch break and can actually get a pretty good pattern on you.
Wow.
And I know in combination with the cameras they're putting at the lights, like they've done in London, it's pretty much full spectrum surveillance. I mean, there's almost then that's basic technology. That's not what we're talking about that these victims are being attacked with.
No.
That's
no.
Just basic digital camera technology, and it is already almost inescapable.
Really? Okay. So you say that there's more than like 300,000 people targeted in the U.S., and there's just like countless worldwide that are under this type of monitoring.
I have heard from people in just about every country in the world. The only country that I had not heard many victims from was Japan, and in the last 6 months, I've been contacted by three or four people from there. I've been contacted from just about every country in the Middle East, a lot of victims from Yemen, from Germany, from Belgium. With the group, the two groups that I work with in the United States, one is Freedom from Covert Surveillance and Harassment. Mm-hmm. They actually do surveys with the victims where we can actually get statistics and demographics on who is being victimized and how they're being victimized. If you extrapolate the data that we've collected in just that one organization, and there's multiple organizations dealing with this type of crime, we estimate about 300,000 and growing in the United States. The other organization is the International Center Against Abuse of Covert Technologies, .org, ISAACT.org. And that's kind of our research arm. It's mostly professionals from multidisciplinary avenues trying to kind of look for answers and research this phenomenon and try to figure out how to get it back into Congress for a congressional hearing.
You said that these complaints, range from, people saying that they've been chipped to bullied, harassed, gang stalked, raped, remote torture, cyber attacks, punished for whistleblowing, financial ruin. I'm assuming that by that you mean that, this thing took its toll to the point that they've gone into financial ruin. Slander, rumor campaign, psychologically targeted, and religious harassment, and many more, and many other things as well. Really?
Yeah, and sometimes it's the person has spent, the way they go into financial ruin, sometimes they spent most of their money looking for answers that, for the most part, can't be found. I mean, there's a lot online. Actually, this is probably one of the most commonly complained about crimes online that's gotten the least major media attention. A lot of people will exhaust their money going to doctors and doing scans and trying to find a chip. You don't have to be chipped for this to happen, and that's actually why part of the reason we think the stalking goes on. But the other way is some people just have money electronically taken out of their account. And I talked to a number of victims here in Texas who, once their house was broken into, they went through, their belongings, they got their routing numbers, their checking account numbers, and electronically defrauded their accounts. And, right now the technology has gotten such that people who know what they're doing can actually drain your bank account dry electronically, and the bank can't trace where it went.
Hmm. Okay, what is a person's defense in a situation like that? What can they do?
Well, and that's kind of where it gets difficult. For some of the electronic stuff, if you're under this type of technologic attack, one of the kind of more scary things that sounds like science fiction is essentially the hearing voices part of it is a two-way form of communication. It's called voice-to-skull. It's also called synthetic telepathy. It's been available unidirectionally where one they can actually beam it at you and communicate you back to a base. At the University of Irvine in California, they're currently and have been for a couple of years now working on it, where soldiers can communicate thought to thought in a field through a satellite uplink.
Did you say thought to thought?
Yeah, thought to thought.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing with this technology, and most victims figure it out pretty quickly, that when they begin to hear their perpetrators in their head describing where they're at, what they're wearing, what they're eating, or who they're with, they notice fairly quickly that these people respond back to their thoughts. You don't have to talk out loud to these voices. You can think an answer back, and they receive it. And it is a form of synthetic telepathy. And that's why, for your listeners who don't believe that this exists, Google Synthetic Telepathy, University of Irvine. There's actually a website set up on what they're working on. And that's in the private sector, which is usually 10 to 20 years behind the government sector. So, it's synthetic telepathy. You actually think your answer's back.
Go ahead. I was going to switch gears, so go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, well, I was just going to, that's kind of the big privacy concern that we have is, we already know the NSA is listening to our phone calls, reading our text messages, reading our emails. Most of us kind of think that privacy of thought is always going to be private. And we're now, you know, in an era where we've got technology to hear a thought and communicate to someone in their head, create Manchurian candidates. And the last bastion of privacy, which was your thought, is no longer private. And there's a lot of social implications to that.
Feeling your thoughts. So if you're thinking, you're in a room full of people and you're thinking, I'm just going to slip out of here and I'm just going to go to the beach, they can snatch that thought and meet you at the beach.
Yeah. That's why these perpetrators are always one step ahead of the victim.
Wow. That is crazy. Okay, so for those of you all that are still lost, going, what are they talking about? We're talking about the topic Manchurian Candidate, real conspiracy theory or real threat. We're talking to Dr. John Hall. He's an anesthesiologist out of San Antonio, but he's also turned private investigator and learned a lot about mind control and brainwashing and topics like Manchurian Candidate. And he has a new book out called New Breed, what's it called, Satellite Terrorism?
Terrorism in America, yeah.
Yeah, Satellite Terrorism in America. New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. And so let's talk a little bit about mind control, because how is it that someone can take, you know, you're in a conversation with them one day and then the next day they got control of your mind? How is that possible?
Well, I mean, there's a number of ways to do it. If you look back at the early studies in it, and the whole reason the term Manchurian Candidate came up was actually after the Korean War, when they found out that the POWs that had been taken to China came back programmed. They came back with alternate personalities and were trying to sabotage the war effort. At first, they seemed normal, but there seemed to be triggering factors or triggering agents that would snap them into an alternate personality, and in that personality they had been instructed to sabotage the war effort. It had been long known before then that, you know, you could use some hypnotic suggestion to make people do things that maybe they ordinarily wouldn't do. It was long thought that even under hypnotic suggestion you wouldn't do anything that's against your moral values or your ethical values. But it was found out pretty quickly that that's not necessarily the case. One of the things that they did it then with drugs and with deprivation, you can actually break the human mind by drugging, by severe deprivation and severe torture to create an alternate personality. Well, what they found out with the advent of electromagnetic energy, that the brain is so responsive to extremely low frequency waves, ultrasonic waves, that you can basically upload and download the brain like a computer. And there's actually an excellent article that was written several years back called The Brain Has No Firewall. And the DOD and just about every intelligence agency has worked extensively at this type of technology. And you basically take a person and you create an alternate personality with a trigger. And for instance, we might take you, Carrie, and, you know, have your normal personality in one instance, convert you to an alternate personality, and in your alternate personality, you're Jane Doe, and you're a CIA agent, and we're sending you out on a mission to bomb a restaurant. And by the way, this experiment was actually done just the way I'm describing it to you, with a female CIA, a real female CIA agent. She was given the pseudonym Jane Doe. She was told to plant a fake bomb underneath a toilet in a restaurant. She was converted to her alternate personality, which had been done using electromagnetic technology and a combination of that and hypnosis. When she was converted to her Jane Doe personality, she was instructed to do what she did, and she took the dummy bomb. She went into the restaurant. She planted it in a restroom stall, came out all under video, and then she was given a trigger, you know, which usually can be a spoken word, you know, a doorbell, a phone that rings once, and she was snapped back into her real identity. And they said, well, you know, you just went and, you know, and hit a bomb in this restaurant in one of the bathroom stalls under the pseudonym of Jane Doe. She thought they were crazy. She said, you know, I'm a real CIA agent. I would know better than to use a pseudonym of Jane Doe. That would obviously get me caught. And then they showed her the video where she did everything she was instructed to do and had absolutely no recollection of it, because one personality won't know anything about what the other personality is doing. Some good examples of that, Dr. Colin Ross, who's right up there in Dallas, Texas, by you, Carrie, has done some really good examples of showing the public how Manchurian candidates are created. And one, he took a guy and convinced him that he would walk with a limp, and he would continue to walk with a limp until he heard his phone ring. And once he heard his phone ring, then he would walk normally. And once hypnotized into his alternate personality, this guy walked with a pretty severe limp. The minute he heard his phone ring, he began to walk normally, never knowing that he was actually limping. So, I mean, the technology works fairly well for doing that.
Didn't you say that everyone is controllable?
According to some of the researchers that have been working with electromagnetic technology, including one of the guys who actually worked on the system that puts voices in your head, one of their theories is that everyone is controllable, and that the victims that you're seeing being harassed with electronic harassment are the subsegment of the population that are resistant. The sense behind that is, if you're using a technology that you hope to control the masses with, then, and you find out that you have small pockets of people who can't be controlled, you want to make them look delusional or mentally ill so they'll never convince anyone else that there's a control mechanism in place. Essentially, you want to sideline those people. And usually a mental diagnosis pretty well does it.
So, wow, that's scary. I think that one passed by me and came back and just ricocheted. So are you saying, like, we probably are all under some form of mind control right now?
Well, that is one of the theories, and one of the things I point out to people, you know, we have HARP, we have all kind of different, you know, Wi-Fi signals. We're being bombarded by a lot of electromagnetic signals in modern society, and any of them can actually be piggybacked or modulated to have an effect on the human brain, including HARP. And Dr. Nick Begich and others have wrote some really good books on HARP being used to change mood, change personality. One of the things I tell people, have you ever had one of those days where it's a blah day, you're not depressed, you've had plenty of sleep, but you get up and you go to work and you're just not 100%, you know, it's just a down day, a gray day, and then you start talking to your coworkers and everybody's kind of feeling like that day, just really, you know, not at 100%, you know, that may not be coincidental, you know, that may be control.
That's scary. That is scary. How much do you think the TV has to do with it? I mean, I call it the dumb tube now. I don't watch a lot of TV, and I used to really enjoy TV, but I just really feel like it has so much programming involved in it on a subliminal level that we are not even aware of. Do you think that's the case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been working on subliminal control through the media for a long time, and if you remember, I think it was, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, the Japanese first started working with that, and they had subliminal programming in a children's cartoon. The programming was specifically to induce seizures. And they did show this particular cartoon, and they did have a bunch of people show up at the emergency rooms with their kids having seizures from watching the cartoon. So it is very possible to do with light strobing. In a video picture, but you know, that's the same reason, like in the emergency room, if we're wheeling an awake patient, you know, lying on their back on a stretcher over UV lights, will oftentimes cover their face or cover their eyes, because in a lot of people, just flashing light from a siren or being wheeled on a stretcher and watching UV lights will actually induce seizure. The brain is incredibly sensitive to pulsing light and to electromagnetic energy. And one of the early researchers on that with the Navy was Dr. Michael Persinger up at Laurentian University in Canada. He started experimenting on human brains with extremely low frequency waves, kind of like Aaron Alexis complained
right.
of, and found out that he could put people in a shielded room, bombard the temporal lobes of the brain with a certain frequency of ELF, and could simulate alien abduction. These people were alone in a room having their brains bombarded with energy and swore to God that they were abducted by aliens. Or they would have what he termed the sentinel being effect, that they were actually in a room with God or with some type of a sentinel being, possibly an alien, when indeed they were actually alone in a laboratory.
Let's talk about some of these shootings. I was like, go ahead.
Sure. One other caveat with Persinger's work. Persinger himself said, after discovering how sensitive the brain was to this technology of ELF, that he could control every brain on the planet with microwave energy.
Wow. You know, a lot of us think of brainwashing in terms of stories that we've heard. We don't really relate to it in any way, you know, to anybody we know specifically. But one case in particular, when I think of Jim Jones and the Guyana tragedy, and you wonder how in the world did this man get all those people on a plane and leave the United States and go to Guyana? But that was some form of brainwashing, was it not?
Oh, yeah. It's funny you should bring that up, because Jim Jones and the People's Temple, I believe, was his group. Jim Jones had CIA connections, and there were well-known CIA connections within the People's Temple. The same thing with the Heaven's Gate. All the people that killed themselves in their sneakers when the Halley-Bopp comet flew over. And that group, cult group, actually had some very well-known CIA connections as well, as did a satanic group out of California called the Temple of Set, that was actually run by a former CIA individual named Michael Aquino. One of the theories on the Jim Jones and the Guyana and the Heaven's Gate thing was that the CIA actually created these groups intentionally to do group experimentation. You know, they had already experimented on individuals with some of this technology, and then they created these cult groups to actually use as a group of guinea pigs for experimentation using this technology.
That is scary stuff, y'all. Okay, y'all, before we get into all these specific shootings, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the topic, Manchurian Candidate, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat. We're trying to tie in that topic with some of the shootings that we saw in Newtown and the Navy Yard shooting and the Gabby Gafford shooting and also the Aurora Theater shooting. We're trying to see if we can bring in a common denominator that makes this make sense. And so let's start with Aaron Alexis. We know that he was a 34-year-old. He was a former full-time Navy reservist. They said he had he was actually a licensed person. He had a concealed carry permit that he got in Texas. But it was several things that didn't make sense. He was so legitimate on one end, but then there were so many inconsistencies with how he could have possibly had the clearance that he did to get onto the Navy Yard that day. So let's talk about the fact that, you know, despite the fact that this guy was an aviation electrician mate, they said, third class in the U.S. Navy Reserve, and he even received an honorable discharge in 2011. But despite that, he also had other things going on, didn't he, that totally contradicted that?
Yeah, you know, I know the media is kind of playing up the fact that maybe he wasn't appropriately vetted as far as his background check and getting his clearance. But, you know, I tell you what, they're pretty good about checking on things. And I think they might be embellishing some of his history a little bit to kind of fit make it look the way they want it to look as far as his mental health. You know, I'm not sure that he had a long history of mental problems. I know he had a history of problems the month prior because he had gone to the police and told them that he had been stalked by people from the airport and that he was being attacked by microwave energy with the intent to sleep deprive him and heat him up, which is what almost every one of these victims complains about. His big thing was he did have a clearance. He did work in the IT world. He did have at least access through his clearance to kind of know a little bit about this technology and these weapons. And I think that's the reason for the inscription on the shotgun. I mean, I know the major media outlets called it a cryptic inscription, that like they, and the FBI really had no clue why he inscribed that. He wrote, "This is my elf weapon, better off this way." He knew what he was being attacked with, and he went to where he perceived the attacks from coming from to attack back himself, was what it appears to be. Now, in one of the FBI spokesperson came out and said that, you know, that elf weapons were the hallmark of conspiracy theorists who think that there's elf wave technology that can be weaponized. They presented it in that article from their spokesperson as non-scientific, that there hasn't been actually any research on that, when indeed there's a ton of research on using elf waves as a weapon. Specifically to put voices in the head, microwaves to heat up the human body, the addendum, the Army's addendum to the effects of bioeffects of non-lethal weapons, which actually came out in the Freedom of Information Act, specifically talks about using microwave to put voices in the head of enemy combatants to disconcert them, talks about using it to in a hostage situation where you can communicate with the hostages without the hostage taker hearing, and goes on to say how with their experimentation, they can communicate with someone and it can't be recorded even with a microphone in the inner ear. So, I mean, the technology's there. The research is legitimate research. You can find it in the Air Force Dual Vistas, the Army's addendum to the bioeffects of non-lethal weapons. There's been a lot of articles written on it, and the FBI spokesperson kind of presented it as conspiracy theory when it is not. It's fact that these weapons have been worked on.
Because, you know, in his particular case, I was looking at, you know, and I'm with you, something ain't adding up, but, you know, exactly what it is, I hadn't figured it out yet. But on August 7th of 2013, he was in a hotel room, and he called the Newport, Rhode Island police saying that three men had been sent to harass him. So I'm assuming that's the stalking issue. And if he felt that they were following him and sending him vibrations into his body. And he thought that some sort of microwave machine was sending vibrations through the ceiling, penetrating his body so that he couldn't sleep. So sleep deprivation is something that you mentioned earlier, was it not?
Yeah, because sleep deprivation wears you down really quickly. And, you know, It kind of furthers you along to eventually they want to get you diagnosed as mentally ill. If they can sleep deprive you for a week or two, then have you going around telling everybody that you're being followed and you're being stalked and you're being attacked with directed energy weapons, you know, with your hair disheveled and big dark bags and circles under your eyes, it fits the look that they're trying to get. So that way they're assured of you getting a diagnosis. You lose your job, then you get to sit at home and be experimented on without them having to follow you anywhere.
Wow.
Appears to be the goal. But, you know, the other thing that they did with him was look back through his history and, you know, yeah, he, you know, was arrested, you know, a couple of times. He shot the tires out of some construction equipment and, you know, did some other things. And you have to be real careful the way you read into that. Most of us, if you were to, you know, go to Walmart tomorrow and, you know, short of cash and went in there with a gun and held up a cash register, or the cashier for some money. Just about all of us have something not that crazy, but if you did that, I could dig back in your history and probably find one or two other things where maybe you went off on somebody out of anger, had a bad argument with an ex-boyfriend. You know, you can find things in all of our histories to create, you know, the look that's right to add up to something you did, because none of us are perfect, and we've all done some crazy things. And that kind of is, you know, what the media seems like they kind of did in his case. Yeah, you know, taking a gun and shooting the tires out of somebody's construction equipment looks bad, especially after you've been found to shoot at the Navy Yard. But in and of itself, you know, especially, you know, in the state of Texas, you know, if according to witnesses, they were doing construction in a lot behind his place and they were using the big rigs and the equipment when he was trying to sleep, I can see other people probably having done that. It doesn't necessarily follow suit that it's because you're mentally ill. But, you know, when you've done something that does look like it's due to mental illness, you can usually find some other instances in somebody's, you know, history to kind of support that assumption. But, you know, that man made it as clear as day that he knew what was attacking him. And he did certainly have the clearance and the availability to know a little bit about it. So you know, even talking to one of the people who actually helped develop this technology for the CIA, I immediately emailed him, Dr. Robert Duncan, and his exact words to me was, he was a programmed assassin. So,
wait, you said did what?
He was a programmed assassin.
No.
I think they were hoping to drive him mad enough to where he would shoot up something. I don't think they were intending it on being the Navy Yard necessarily. I think he knew enough about the technology where he assumed it was coming from there. But, you know, this current administration wants gun control in a bad way. And I don't think it's any surprise that when we have so many legislators, you know, clamoring for gun control, that we all of a sudden conveniently have a bunch of mass shootings, you know, especially mass shootings of children. You know, what better to get the public crying out for gun control than, you know, to have a bunch of kids shot?
Wow. That's one way of putting it. That is definitely one way of putting it. Because, you know, when you look at this guy, they said Alexis was able to get an honorable discharge and receive the Global War on Terrorism Service Medal and the National Defense Service Medal Awards of Minor Distinction. That just doesn't sound like a dumb guy. I mean, it just seems like, you know, the jobs that he was, you know, doing with the Navy, and it just doesn't seem like he was just some stupid guy. You know, and they said that people in Fort Worth that knew him, that he was just the nicest guy. He was extremely courteous and intelligent, and he never showed any signs of violence. And that was what his landlord said.
Yeah, his landlord said he always had a smile on his face and was actually a pretty lovable guy. And that's the same thing we're hearing about the woman that, you know, tried to drive her car into the, you know, the White House there in D.C., across the barricades and got shot today, as most of the people from her past were shocked when they read that it was her doing that, that it was just behavior that was, you know, completely out of the norm.
Okay, what is someone's defense to keep from this type of situation? I'm getting tongue-tied just trying to say that, y'all. What is someone's defense to keep this from happening to them? What can they do?
Well, you know, if you're one of the people who is completely controllable, you know, I'm not real sure, you know, what the defense would be. I know that, you know, like in the Jared Loughner case, and in the Aaron Alexis case, these people tried to get help. You know, and I'm not talking trying to get help for their mental illness, trying to get help for the fact that they knew they were being victimized ahead of time. Jared Loughner had written in his Facebook and had reached out to several people claiming that he felt like his mind was being manipulated. Someone was trying to get into his head. His own mother, in one of her statements, said that she had heard him having complete conversations with someone in his room when there was no one else there. And that's exactly what you hear with this kind of victimization. These people will talk to you and try to get you to talk back, and it does sound like a complete conversation that you're hearing one side of, because only they can hear the other side. So I think the best thing would be that if we could educate the public that this type of technology exists, and if you start, you know, specifically, you know, hearing voices and they're trying to coerce you into doing anything or telling you that, you know, they're the voice of God, and I have had some victims that were fairly religious that were victimized by this technology, and at first they were told that they were hearing angels or they were hearing God, and then eventually, you know, it got around to, well, no, we're the CIA or we're the FBI. One group of girls here in San Antonio were hearing, you know, two men that were claiming to be their spirit guides, and they actually thought that maybe they were hearing angels. Until their spirit guides started asking them to perform lesbian acts on each other, then they realized that they were being harassed. So, you know, one of the things is know your own voice, know your own personality. You know, understand that, for one, God's not going to speak to you in a completely audible voice the way you're hearing my voice right now. That's more of an intuition or a feeling thing. And, you know, and certainly, you know, God is not going to ask you to go shoot anybody. That's for one thing. If you happen to hear voices that are using that kind of a cover, and they occasionally do use the religious theater like that on people. The other thing is just if you start having outlandish thoughts that you know aren't your own, and a lot of people will describe that. You know, they'll contact me and they'll say, well, I'm not really hearing voices, but I'm having thoughts that I know just can't be coming from me because it's things that I never think about. You know to control those. And knowledge that the fact that this technology exists is probably the best defense. Was that way you don't, you know, go around telling everybody you're under surveillance. You seek out, you know, the right venues with people you can talk to about protecting yourself from it. And that would be freedom from covert surveillance and harassment. ICAACT.org, mindjustice.org. There's, you know, organizedstalking.com. It's such a prevalent crime that there's actually quite a few organizations that are handling complaints from victims where they can actually get online or get on a conference call and talk to people that will understand, that either know about the technology or are going through it themselves.
Wow. You know, and the whole thing is just so incredible because, you know, we're being bombarded with so many things coming at us right now, but it's just something that is possible. And so, like I said, anybody who's listening to the show tonight or tomorrow, whenever you may hear the show, well, definitely listen with an open mind, and unless you have done the research, do not discard any of this information as being, you know, just a conspiracy theory. At least listen with an open mind tonight, because all of these shootings, they just all have, like, red flags all over them, and, you know, who knows where the truth lies, but there's just enough that doesn't make sense that makes you question it. And I think today we're living in a time in which we should not take anything for granted and we should question everything. And I think that's our greatest defense also, Doctor, is that we don't take anything for granted. Follow your gut. If your gut says something's going on, you agree?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And if it doesn't seem right, then don't do it. Unfortunately, you know, we're not at a point where, you know, you can get much law enforcement help or legal help with it because, you know, with a bunch of other things, you know, technological advancement is accelerating at a rate quicker than our jurisprudence system does. So, you know, we're developing technologies that there are no laws against. And, you know, one case that I actually wrote about in the book was here in Texas, in Mission, Texas, Jesus Maldonado, was actually working at a law school, and his job was to procure money for Black and Hispanic students to go to law school. Mm-hmm. Well, he found out that the CIA was actually diverting the minority funds to send their own people to law school at this particular law school. He blew the whistle and was immediately fired by the law school. They knew it was going on. Up in New York, I believe. He moved back to Mission, Texas, and immediately his family began to get attacked by directed energy weapons to the point where his mother-in-law actually committed suicide to get away from the attacks. His kids had oval-shaped, star-shaped checkerboard burned into their bodies on occasions. They were having headaches, they were having muscle twitching, burning of the eyes, general feeling of illness. He hired a company that came in and actually took measurements of electromagnetic and radioactive signals coming into the house. It turns out he was being exposed to not only electromagnetics, but radiation as well from certain weapons. And he took it to the federal court system, actually took it, I think, to a circuit federal court where Alberto Gonzalez, our former attorney general, actually wound up having his whole case after going through several lower courts successfully, basically had his case thrown out, telling him that it was not unconstitutional for them to attack him in his home with electromagnetic weapons. And all of those cases are actually in the appendix in the back of my book. They're you know, people who may think that this is, you know, all conspiracy theory or, you know, science fiction.
You know what? I'm amazed because, you know, you did a lot of research on it, and for the most part, it just seems like stuff you've never heard of. I mean, most people are probably listening going, wow, never heard of this, never heard of that. But I think it's worth researching because it sounds like from all indicators, anybody could be a potential victim of this. It's not like, you know, when we look at all these people that we're talking about tonight, James Holmes, Jared Lochner, Adam Lanza, and Aaron Alexis, you know, they came from all different walks of life. You know, some were wealthy, some were not. You know, some were black, some were white. It's just not, you know, if you want to add the lady that was involved in the D.C. shooting today, there's no common denominator. She was female. So you have to look at this with an open mind and say, you know, you need the information just so, you know, at least you'll be aware and know how to discern when things are not right. One thing I think, you know, that's amazing to me that I question if people need to be more careful about, your associations. You know, I would think that some of these things maybe occur through connecting yourself with the wrong people, possibly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you... at least I know here in Texas, the group that does it here, it's kind of being used as a toy of the wealthy. Like I said, you know, the way I initially, you know, was told about this particular former FBI agent was by a fairly wealthy ear, nose, and throat surgeon here in San Antonio, who had said, you know what, I've never introduced my wife to this guy. I'm hiding him from my wife in case I want to make her look crazy in a divorce. Well, about 4 years ago, after the book was out, I had a lady contact me from Fredericksburg, Texas, you know, who was going through a nasty divorce from a very prominent husband in the area whose family owns just about all of this town.
Mm.
She asked me, she said, I know you changed the names in the book. Is this who it is? And I said, yeah, that's exactly who it is. They had came to her during the divorce and offered to help her. They said, well, we heard you're going through a nasty divorce and your husband's going to try to take everything. We want to help you.
Right.
She went, the private investigator took her to a lawyer's office where they tried to strong arm her into signing away her half of their communal property. She refused, got a taxi, got out of there, got home. Immediately started getting stalked. Her home started getting broken into. Cars sitting in front of her house, shining their brights into the, you know, living room windows, bedroom windows, breaking in when they weren't there, harassing the kids, hearing voices, being attacked by directed energy. So a lot of it does have to do with who you affiliate with. If you're, you know, if you're running with the rich and powerful, a lot of times it's the rich and powerful that have access to get this hire done to you. Another case in Texas was out of Amarillo. There was a man up there that owns a chain of storage facilities, and he got on the wrong side of a very powerful attorney's group up there. This attorney and his family own much of Amarillo, including the FBI office and most of the law enforcement there. And they definitely had access to get him targeted the same way. So, I mean, you've got to watch out if you're trying to be a small fish in a big pond, and you anger the right people. There'll certainly be somebody that knows where to go to hire this done. And that's the interesting thing with the way this victimization is working. On one hand, you can see where it's being hired done by people who do know the people that are doing it. But it's still technology that can only be accessed by the government giving it to you, to these perpetrator groups to use. So it's one of those situations where each one of these groups is saying, here's the technology, carte blanche, you can use it for however you want to use it. We're only interested in the way it works. Now, one of the, you know, more scary things about it is it appears that once they choose you as a victim, that they're being told that they have to watch you for the life of the victim. Most of these victims have been victimized for 10 years or longer. It might slow down or minimize, but it typically doesn't completely stop. And that seems to be one of the rules of engagement, that once they're given this technology, they're told that, you know, as you pick people that you're going to do this to, you have to watch them until they die naturally, or, and sadly, in a lot of cases, until you can drive them to suicide.
Wow. So pretty cruel and evil stuff.
About as evil as it gets.
Wow. You know, if you just tune in, you go, what are they talking about? We're talking about the topic tonight, Manchurian Candidate, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat. If you're someone who basically, you know, has read the book Manchurian Candidate or seen the movie, I think Denzel Washington was in one of the versions of Manchurian Candidate. Trust me, things like that do happen. And so I think tonight I would say again, listen with an open mind, even if it may be like totally over your head. After the show, go back and do your own research. But absolutely, absolutely tonight, listen with an open mind. Going back to the Gabby Gifford shooter, Jared Lochner, you know, this guy was a high school dropout. Basically, you know, he was an only child. You know, he came from a very private family. They said he worked for the city park, and he kept to himself basically and really didn't even respond to others. But they said his behavior began to change once his high school girlfriend broke up with him, and he began to abuse drugs and alcohol, specifically marijuana and mushrooms and some other things. And so, you know, when you look at these people, all of the shooters, they always seem to have some quirk in their past, like mental illness, or, you know, someone said that they were strange or odd. Do you have to be careful today about finding yourself being singled out as an oddball, or, you know, someone that's not socially, fitting in, that type of thing? Do you have to be careful today, because is that how they're choosing some of these candidates?
Well, I mean, that certainly may be. If you look back at the original MKUltra research, a lot of times these experiments were carried out on people who were what we term social outliers, people with a drug history, people with some type of a radical history or a mental illness history. Unfortunately, this country has a real poor history of human rights as far as experimenting on people without their consent. We've done it. Our government has done it for years. I mean, we've experimented on children in orphanages, prisoners in prisons, experimented on the mentally ill, experimented on our vets in the VA system without consent. So, you know, certainly if you're odd or you already have a drug history or a mild mental health history, you're a prime target because, you know, they've already got a pretty good cover. You know, when you go around and tell people that you're under this type of victimization or that you're being electronically harassed and people are controlling your mind, people are going to look at your history and judge you by your history, not on the facts that you may be giving them. So, and that's a pretty common ploy. And if you, by the way, all of the early mind control research from MKUltra all was released in Freedom of Information directly from the CIA. This isn't conspiracy theory either. And you can look up every one of those sub-projects and what was done, and it was probably just as bad, if not worse, than some of the experimentation that the Nazis did on the Jews during World War II. But it was done by us. So, yeah, certainly if you're an oddball and you have a drug history or a mental health history, that is definitely taken advantage of by these perpetrator groups, because when they do get you to do act out or tell people that you're under surveillance or being controlled, it will almost certainly be blamed on your drug problem or on your mental health history.
Why does the mainstream media not pick up on this? Or why don't they address?
They slowly are, and that's, I guess, the one good thing that came out of the whole Aaron Alexis thing. And I think probably the reason he etched on the shotgun what he etched on the shotgun was hoping that it would get media exposure. The Washington Times actually contacted me to do an article after that, when one of the reporters did a little research, and, you know, especially after the FBI went way out of their way to present directed energy or ELF-based weapons as something that in the sci-fi realm, when when extensive research has been done on it that's provable, and called me and said, I'd like to get your take on this, and actually did a very good article in Washington Times. But so that's the first. Other than a major media source in South America, Vladimir Putin about 2 years ago came out in a speech and said that whichever country controls the best directed energy weapons and electromagnetic weapons will control the globe without bullets or missiles. The major media here, not a one touched that comment. And he even went on to explain how they have a zombie weapon, that they call it, that can actually manipulate the human brain and actually put you in a zombie-like trance where you can be, you know, sedated, where it's a little easier for somebody to run up and shoot you because you won't be able to defend yourself. Nobody in this country actually addressed those comments. The only one that I got a call from was El Spectador in South America, who wanted my comments on it after they did the research and saw that people are here complaining about experimentation with directed energy. So that's a good question. The only thing I can figure is, for one, the major media is pretty well controlled by the government. Then they're pretty well instructed what to say and what not to say. We really have a pretty good dividing line. You've got, you know, one side of the major media gives you the liberal agenda, one side, Fox, you know, gives you the conservative or right-wing agenda. And somewhere in between there is the truth. And I think we're at a point where really the truth you're more likely to get from an alternative news source like this show.
You know, one term I don't use in my vocabulary and I haven't used for a while is the term broke. You know, that somebody said, well, what does broke have to do with this show? One thing that I found today is you make yourself an easy target when you walk around saying, I'm broke. And one thing that came out, I believe, in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, or one of the news outlets that covered Aaron Alexis in Fort Worth, they said that he was complaining of having money problems, and he was, you know, calling back, trying to borrow money here because he said whoever had hired him where he went had not paid him. And I think sometimes you have to be very careful today because we live in a very evil and cruel world. And if you're someone who's money strapped, you better keep it to yourself, because I think sometimes people who have ulterior motives could possibly take advantage of you because you need money. And so I don't know if that was the situation with Aaron Alexis, but I just found it odd that he was so strapped for money, and he said whoever had hired him was still owing him money. And so he was out away from, you know, his friends and family, and I guess pretty much depending upon whoever this was that hired him to give him the money that they owed him, and they did not. And he was calling back to the Fort Worth area, talking to some of his friends, asking if they could loan him money. And so I think today is a very, very bad time to use. I don't care if you have two pennies in your pocket. I would not tell anybody else that I was broke. And I think, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, we talked a minute ago about associations. I think that we're living in a time that the strong will prey on the weak. And
I couldn't agree with you more. And especially if you look at all of the research that's just been done this way, like I said, is typically on social outliers. And you're right. If you're one of these people that is letting people know that you're broke, and especially the people that kind of run these programs see themselves as somewhat of the elite, as the people that will ultimately control the underlings or control the masses. If they see you as, if you see yourself as being broke and kind of on the lower rung of society, well, certainly they're going to see you that way. And in most of the minds, at least the people that I know we've counter-surveilled, are definitely going to see you as expendable. And one thing you don't want to give anybody any reason to think you're expendable in today's society, because you're right, people will prey on you. Things have gotten pretty rough.
Really, and I think it's a sad time, but I think it seems like some of these people could have possibly been, if there is a such thing as a Manchurian candidate, they probably could have been singled out for one reason or another for being odd or weird or broke or something that singled them out from the rest of the group. And so, you know, speaking of that, Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza, This guy was, I understand, very intelligent, 20 years old. He lived in Sandy Hook, 5 miles from where the shooting took place, with his mother. He had attended this elementary school at one time for a brief period. They said he was an honor student. Basically, he had gone to, I think, college for about a year. He was described as intelligent but nervous and fidgety. They said he avoided attention and was uncomfortable socializing. Basically, he had no friends. And so it seems like, you know, when you have situations like this today, if they're looking for a Manchurian candidate, basically, if they take out your family and you don't have any friends, there's nobody to speak up for you. You know, and say, well, hey, he was a good guy, or she was a good person, and I don't think she did this. You know, basically, it just seems like whatever story is told by the media, that's going to be the story that's believed because there's nobody to speak up for you.
Well, that's exactly right. And there were a lot of questions in that Sandy Hook shooting. I mean, yeah, but, you know, from all accounts, the kid was a strange kid. But, you know, we both live in Texas, you and I, and I do some hunting and do some shooting, and let me tell you, shooting a moving target is pretty difficult to do, even in a well-trained shooter. The one thing that was odd in that case is here's a kid who had been to the range a few times, but by no means was an experienced shooter, was able to walk into that school and actually shoot a bunch of scrambling, running kids who I'm sure were probably running for their lives around the room, and actually shoot them with fairly decent accuracy seems almost impossible for a 20-year-old kid with no combat experience and no shooting training, really, other than his mom taking him to the range. The other thing that's odd about that whole case was some of the early reports that, you know, there were two witnesses that saw a second person running from that school in the woods. Initially, the police agreed that there was. Then when they were asked later on, it was kind of blown off, and nothing more was heard about it. I know the real hardcore conspiracy theorists are even claiming that it didn't go on at all. I don't believe that because I think, you know, we had dead kids and we had funerals and it happened. I'm just not so sure it happened the way they are presenting it. And certainly, you know, as in the Aaron Alexis case, of course, you know, the shooter in the end is dead. His mother's dead. There's nobody to get the rest of the story from, which is always the case. In the Aaron Alexis case, luckily he's etched into the shotgun, something that kind of points us in the right direction of why he did it. The other interesting thing is Jared Loughner and the Holmes, the one that shot up the movie theater in Colorado. If you noticed, we really haven't heard anything about them. None of their statements or none of their comments, you know, since they're both still living, is being released. We don't, matter of fact, the toxicology report's not even been released from Holmes. And another interesting thing is that the father of the Colorado shooter and the father of the Sandy Hook shooter both worked in finance. The Colorado shooter's father actually was one of the early founders of the FICO rate. He determined the mathematics to determine your credit score. And the Sandy Hook father worked in finance and had worked with GE. Both were slated to testify to Congress regarding the LIBOR scandal, which is the London interbank rate, which is the percent or the interest rate at which banks loan money to other banks. It's set in England, which was having some bad corruption problems, setting fixed rates and loaning money to the bank at accelerated rates when the rates were actually lower. I don't think that was necessarily coincidence that you had two kids run amok having a shooting, mass shooting, when both of their fathers are scheduled to testify in the Senate.
I did not know that. That is weird. And I know that Adam Lanza, they said, was autistic. He had been diagnosed as being autistic. And if anybody knows anything about autism, this is not – autistic people do not typically do rampages. That's just side note there. But it just doesn't typically happen. But that was just one of the things to mention on that. Now, moving on to James Holmes, that was the Aurora Theater shooter. And, you know, this guy was amazing to me because extremely intelligent, extremely high GPAs, graduate student. It just makes no sense. This guy was 25 years old. You know, he killed 12 people, they said. No past criminal history at all. His father was a scientist and his mother was a nurse, or is a nurse, and father is a scientist. He worked as an intern at someplace called Salk Institute for Biology Studies, and he was assigned to computer code for the experiment, computer code, you know, for an experiment. This guy was just described, however, though, as being stubborn, uncommunicative, and socially inept. Again, y'all, being targeted and singled out for, you know, not fitting in socially. He had received an undergraduate degree in neuroscience with the highest of honors. And I think they said his GPA was, and I'm looking for it, Holmes graduated in the top 1% of his class with a GPA of 3.949. That's pretty high, y'all, from the University of California at Riverside. I mean, so this guy was no dummy, doctor. He was no dummy.
No, he could have probably went to, you know, his master's training anywhere he wanted to go, and actually did get accepted to several other places and refused them. And interesting, at the institute where he did computer experiment coding, specifically was on computer-brain interaction, you know, brain-computer interfacing. So that's another thing with him that I don't think was completely coincidence. I know, you know, some of the theories are that he was basically controlled to do what he did to kind of send a message to his father on how to testify. So, you know, that's one of the, and it all kind of fit at the right time in the grand scheme of things here, because one of the things that is being sought after right now in the public is gun control. So, you know, and I think they thought, well, for sure, if we have a congresswoman shot, you know, the public will go ahead and vote in gun control. Well, it didn't work, so, I mean, then you have some kids shot up at Sandy Hook. Well, certainly a bunch of young, innocent kids being shot up will get us some gun control, you know, and that still hasn't worked. And you know, the government works, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, and to me anymore, it doesn't matter. The government wants control, and it doesn't matter who's in. The government works with diversion. You know, they show you one hand so you don't look at the other hand to see what it's doing. And if you look at the way things kind of turned out, you know, if you remember when the NSA story broke, when Edward Snowden released the documents where we found out that all the stuff the NSA has denied and all the stuff, by the way, that these people experiencing electronic harassment has said for decades, and they were called crazy for saying, you know, my computer's being watched, my text messages are being watched, my email's being watched. You know, no, there's too many of us using email for anybody to actually watch that. Well, there's not. They have computers big enough to do that, the NSA. So, you know, all the things they were claiming for years, well, the NSA finally had to fess up to, including so bad that they've even fessed up to something they call LoveInt. And if you know the military terms, HUMINT stands for human intelligence, SIGINT, signals intelligence, LoveInt. They've even admitted that many of their agents are using the technology of the NSA to target women they're interested in, girlfriends, ex-wives, current wives, spy on them as well. And that it actually happens frequently enough that they jokingly call it LoveInt, LoveInt, meaning that, you know, spying on a love interest. Once that all broke, and the media started clamoring about, you know, the IRS targeting certain groups, the NSA having overreach and reading, you know, delving into our private lives, well, you needed a diversion. And that diversion was sending missiles into Syria. So all of a sudden, Syria's on the main topic, on the center stage, if you will. We've got to bomb Syria. Well, nobody got behind us on that. You know, and nobody got behind us on that because both of those groups fighting in Syria hate us. So nobody really cared whether they killed each other or not. And certainly none of our allies wanted to back us up. Well, then Putin came forward and kind of embarrassed our president a little bit by doing what he did, so we needed another diversion. Well, that diversion was Aaron Alexis. And that shooting kind of got the media back on track with calling for gun control. Because if you noticed, you know, 30 minutes into that shooting, every pundit on the news was talking about him walking into that Navy Yard with an AR-15 before they even knew what weapon he really used. I mean, every channel was saying AR-15, oh, it was an AR-15, oh, we need to refocus on banning the AR-15. Well, it turns out it was a shotgun, and even some of them tried to hang on to any thread of hope that it was an AR-15. Several of them said that it was a AR-15 form of a shotgun. Well, it wasn't. It was a plain old Remington shotgun. So, you know, the media and the government, at least the major media, work hand in hand fairly well right now. That's why there's really no truth in major media. What you're getting is the diversion with the major media. And that's why people really need to kind of listen to the media with one ear and maybe listen to some alternative media with the other ear. And someplace in there, you're going to find the truth. But, you know, specifically with all the NSA, with the right to privacy and the spying, the truth has been, you know, in the conspiracy theorist, which turned out to be conspiracy facts for all these years. But, you know, the diversion factor is the reason for all the shootings and the things that the government is presenting to us with the visible hand.
Wow. You know, a couple more things on James Holmes before we move on, y'all. James Holmes' attorney said that he was a psychiatric patient prior to the shooting. I think they tried to contest that in court, but it was later found out that he met with at least 3 mental health professionals prior to the shooting. 3. And one shrink said that he suffered from mental illness and could be dangerous, but he failed to hospitalize him. So, who knows? But Holmes was also a big fan of the superhero Batman. So a lot of people said that the orange hair was, you know, his alter ego or whatever with the Batman thing. But I just saw that as a distraction. I didn't really pay too much attention to the orange hair. I thought it was so much bigger than his orange hair, you know, what had happened. So I wasn't buying into the Superman thing or the Batman thing. I wasn't buying into that, even though they made it a part of the story. I just thought it had very little to do with the story.
Well, actually, that part of it probably very well could have been the Manchurian Candidate aspect of it.
The personality.
The alternate personality, exactly. Because if you see the reports from the arresting officer, you know, he put up no fight to being arrested. It never dawned on him to have a shootout with the police. When they arrested him, he was calmly sitting on the with his hands on the trunk of his car, almost in a limp state, like he didn't even know what he had done or where he was. And the arresting officer that took his initial interview when they first arrested him was asked, like I said, we don't have a toxicology report back on him to see what he was on. According to the arresting officer, that his exact words was that he appeared to be not intoxicated or on anything, and that he put his hands behind his back, he let himself be arrested, and according to, you know, the officers, seemed like he didn't know what he was doing in the parking lot. And that would fit in with a Manchurian Candidate scenario, where once the shooting was done and he was converted back to his regular personality, then he may have not even realized why he was there dressed like that, standing in a parking lot with a gun.
Wow.
That's exactly the way Manchurian Candidacy works.
That is crazy. Y'all, we're down to our last 11 minutes of the show. I'm sorry, I had so many questions. I didn't even ask y'all if y'all had any. Listen, if you got a question for the doctor, you need to get on the phone now. Dial us up at 347-850-8390. And Dr. John Hall can take your questions if you have any questions about the Manchurian Candidate, brainwashing, mind control, those types of things. That's what we're talking about tonight, the Manchurian Candidate conspiracy theory or real threat. I mean, Doctor, this has been an awesome conversation. I mean, I've learned a lot. Some of it has made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. But I think I will definitely leave this conversation a wiser person and a more open-minded person to the fact that, you know, we don't know everything, you know, and there's a whole lot, that we have not tapped into that's going on right in front of us. Are there any, you know, I don't know, anything that you would leave with the audience that maybe they should do to, you know, keep themselves from being a victim, or anything that they should be doing, period, that would, you know, help them to avoid being put in the same situation?
Well, I mean, I think you touched on some of it. Is, you know, try to hang out with good people. You know, if like this particular physician who I knew used this guy to harass his competitors. You know, he's not one of the best guys in the world. Yeah, he's a doctor and he's a pretty successful doctor, but as a person, he's actually a pretty bad person. Severe alcoholic, a womanizer. I mean, you want to try to actually, you know, hang out with good people. If you find yourself, you know, trying to run in the same circles with some of the people that do have access to these perpetrators that have this technology, there's a very good chance you'll be attacked by it. Unfortunately, the experimental part of it, a lot of it's random, and some of it might just be you being at the right place at the wrong time. You might have a look that someone attracts to. Like I said, in Palm Springs, there's 60 gay men that are all being attacked, mostly for being gay, I think. They're being attacked pretty severely with directed energy, and all 60 of these people are hearing the same voice in their heads, and it's a female voice that goes by the name Lisa. I mean, to some extent, you may be randomly selected for it, and unless you're in an area where there's one particular group of people they are looking to target. You know, we've done surveys through Freedom from Covert Surveillance and Harassment to try to look at the demographics of it. It doesn't seem to be based on religion. It doesn't seem to be based on race too much. As a matter of fact, early on, let's say 5 or 6 years ago, most of the people we surveyed were white. There were hardly any blacks complaining about this type of victimization. Over the last 5 years, there's been a lot more black people complaining of this type of victimization than there had ever been in the past. So now it's about equal. The only prevalence we see in it is 70% of the victims, whether they're black, white, or any other race, are female. And of those females, majority of them are 35 to 45, are divorced or single and living alone, and almost all of them are also complaining of physical sexual assault along with the stalking.
Now, the sexual assault is only occurring after they're being drugged, right?
Yeah, it's being drugged. The other thing they describe is actual sexual assault with directed energy weapons. And that would be actually using microwave energy to burn the genitals while they're trying to sleep, which is a sleep deprivation technique.
Whoa. that one just went by me and then boomeranged back. That's crazy. I mean, so they're actually feeling this burning sensation as they're trying to sleep.
These weapons have been finely tuned and honed in the research to be, they know exactly where the most sensitive parts of the body are to attack. And two of the places are the genitals, whether you're a male or a female, and actually the back of the skull, where there's two nerves that run right along into the skin in the back of the skull called occipital nerves. And you can target those nerves with just a little bit of energy and actually create severe migraines. That the minute they hit them, you get a migraine. The minute they stop triggering them, the migraine goes away. And those are two very common places. The other one is the heart, making your heart rate speed up and down, and involuntary body movement, where your arm will suddenly just kind of twitch, or your leg will twitch, or your whole body will twitch. And most of these victims will tell you they can tell that it's coming from a source from the outside, causing them to do that.
Okay, another thing I want to touch on before we get out of here tonight, y'all, is under Obamacare, the doctors will be asking you, are you depressed and do you have a weapon? I personally don't think that's a question that the doctor should be asking you. If I'm going to see about my toe, the doctor should not be asking me, am I depressed or do I have a weapon? Doctor, since we know this is the case, what should a person do if they're asked that type of question?
Lie. Straight up lie.
Ask them why. Ask the doctor, why are you asking me this?
Well, I mean, I do know of several of my patients that have told me that some of their primary care doctors have actually asked them about this. And they do, I think, we're hoping that through Obamacare that the physicians would kind of work as the, you know, the guard dogs to find out who has the weapons. You know, that's not something I would ever ask my patient, either one of those questions. Depression sometimes, because I do pain management, and pain and depression kind of go hand in hand. So I will ask my patients if they feel depressed, not because I have to, but because it's part of my practice. Guns, I've had a lot of patients come and say, you're not going to ask me about my guns, right? Because my other doctor did. And, you know, I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't, you know, yeah, if I'm going to ask you, because if you don't have one, I'm going to send you to the store to get one. this is Texas, you know. I don't, certainly don't agree with that. For the most part, at least most of us that have registered weapons, they can figure that out by looking through the paperwork, you know, and see who's registered with weapons. It's not the registered weapons that really ought to be the problem of the government. It's the unregistered weapons. And those are the ones that are being bought and sold on the street and, you know, sold out of theft, you know, or in the government's case, you know, taken down to Mexico and actually provided to the cartel by our own government. So,
Dr. John Hall, tell them how to get your book, A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America.
Actually, you can get it directly off the website from the publisher at satweapons.com. It can be ordered at Barnes & Noble's or bought on Amazon.com. You can also get it at the movie website, which there is a screenplay and there is a movie in pre-production based on the book at newbreedmovie.com.
Okay. Let me call those websites out to y'all again because he went pretty quickly. Again, his book is called A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. His website is SAT, S-A-T, weapons, weapons.com. And his other website is newbreed, B-R-E-E-D, movie.com. That's newbreedmovie.com. Dr. John Hall, thank you so much for being my guest tonight. I hope the audience learned as much as I did.
Carrie, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Listen, y'all, reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, a reminder, y'all, we are here each and every Friday night, Center Stage, from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. This is what we do. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell a coworker to check out the show. And also, I'd like to hear from y'all. Drop me a line this week at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Tell me what y'all think of the show. Tell me what kind of shows y'all like to see me do. I try to do a little of all kinds of things, y'all. I try to mix it up. I try to keep y'all well-informed as I learn. I try to teach y'all, and a lot of times y'all teach me. So send me a line or drop me a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com this week. Let me know what you think of the show and what kind of shows do you think I should be doing. I get a lot of good information. People inbox me all the time on Facebook telling me about different stories that are dropping. I mean, I am just probably the most informed person on Facebook because everybody's letting me know what's going on and letting me know what news has just hit the press. And so I ask y'all to do the same. If y'all see something going on in your community and you think we ought to be talking about it, drop me a line, like I said, at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Okay, y'all, listen, another show I want y'all to come back and tune into this coming 2 weeks from tonight. 2 weeks from tonight, I'm going to be talking about QBE First. That's an insurance company, y'all. And listen, I myself have experienced a bad situation with QBE First Insurance Company. And I'm going to say to y'all, the title of the show is QBE Buyer Beware. And that should tell you just about where that show is going. So come back 2 weeks from tonight. Listen to what I'm going to tell you about QBE First, and I'm going to have a lot of other people on the show who have experienced the same type of treatment from this particular insurance company, and so we're just going to make you aware of what you need to know about QBE First buyer beware. Okay, y'all, I got to get out of here and make way for somebody else that does what I do to step to the mic. But listen, I've enjoyed the show. I hope you did too. And right here next week, center stage, from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. See y'all later. Bye-bye.